Rock Podcast, talking all things Disney with your hosts, Eljon Goh and Dave Bossert.
Welcome once again to the Skull Rock Podcast, the show about all things Disney and pop culture. Every week we take you behind the scenes of some of your favorite Disney films, theme park attractions, performances, books, music, and what else is streaming in theaters, or what is streaming and also in theaters, I should say, and what's going on in the universe or the multiverse of entertainment, as it were. I'm Eljon Goh. I'm your co-host, musician, longtime Disney, Marvel, Star Wars fan, and also pop culturist. You can email me, Eljon, A-L-J-O-N, at skullrockpodcast.com.
And I'm Dave Bossert, artist, filmmaker, author, and welcome to the Skull Rock Podcast. If you love Disney and pop culture, please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can also like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can also email me at dave@skullrockpodcast.com. And Eljon, we've got a pretty fun show today. We're going to be talking True Life Adventure DVDs and Animal Kingdom Park. And we've got a fantastic guest.
Yay.
Mr. Me. Mr. Me is here.
I love it. Yay. I was going to say, there's your applause, Dave.
I love it when the studio audience goes nuts.
Exactly. No, that's great. I mean, we've been fielding our questions, our email bag, if you will, and people are interested in what's going on with the Disney True Life Adventures and the part you had to play in both that, and telling the story in the park, because, you know, you had a hand in some of that stuff too. So
yeah, no, it was a lot of fun, and we're going to get into that and talk a lot about Roy E. Disney and how the True Life Adventure DVD Legacy Collection came about and all of that.
Absolutely. And before we talk about all of that stuff, we actually have a comment, another awesome comment.
Skull Rock Podcast answers your email.
Claudia Rosani says, been catching up with old episodes and just finished this one. Great to learn about this book and all the yummy recipes. We're talking about our recipe book, Dave.
From Kimberly Burchard.
Kimberly Burchard's book, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to dig it out. All kinds of recipes. Your wish that U.S.-Canada border was more chill immediately made me think the same way for U.S.-Mexico border for the same reasons. And I guess she is flying the Mexican flag, so I'm assuming that she would want to go back and forth as well from Mexico. But, of course, we're both glad that you enjoyed the episode, Claudia. And Kimberly Burchard's book is a great book. We've got it here at the house. Obviously, Dave and Nancy contributed to the book as well, so awesome.
And we have a copy in the kitchen.
There you go.
With all those great recipes. So absolutely check that out. And Claudia, thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, don't forget, everybody, to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, as well as give us that feedback and those reviews. Every single bit of that helps. And we love getting those listener emails. So absolutely. So before we get into that, once again, we've been streaming stuff. I mean,
I was going to just, Eljon, if mm-hmm. I could, I was just going to give a shout out to a few people who commented on our show last week.
Oh, great.
William on Facebook said, great interview, although he looks like Huey Lewis in the picture that I posted of Rick Farmelo. yeah, and so we got a whole bunch of comments on the Rick Farmelo interview from last week. Uh-huh. Wonderful podcast from Andrea. Mm-hmm. Fantastic animation, commenting on Rick's work in the various Disney films. That's from Heather.
Yeah.
Antonio, that was a fun listen. So really, it's wonderful to see people commenting on social media, and we appreciate it. We really do.
Yeah, absolutely. Gene had said, One of our listeners, Gene Stumbaugh, had said, I grew up with Rick in Santa Rosa. He's a great guy. Introduced me to all the neighborhood kids to classic monster movies. Frankenstein, Wolfman, Dracula, Boris Karloff. I could go on and on. He even made his own 8mm monster movies, which he wrote, directed, and produced. I think he was only 12 years old. A true gem.
Wow. We should try and get a hold of those and hold them against him.
that was amazing. I love the comments, so please keep them coming. You know, I had to when I create the thumbnails, Dave, I had to make sure that I got the same color as his rose tinted glasses that he loves to wear. So
I think it's awesome. It really is.
Hey, we have another.
It's nice hearing from everybody.
Absolutely, we have another comment too. Also, Bill Mitchell had said, I was looking forward to this show, which is the Destino show we did 2 weeks ago. But I blame Al John since he mentioned The Social Dilemma on Netflix, so I listened to it instead. Mind blown. sorry, Bill, to ruin that part. I can't help it. The Social Dilemma is a really disturbing documentary on Netflix, and that's what we do. We watch films so that you don't have to, but you took our advice and watched it anyway, so I can't help you there. You're feeding the algorithm, as it were. So thank you for that feedback. We appreciate it. Don't forget to leave us those messages on Facebook too. That is a really cool way for you to interact with Dave and myself. So having said that, Dave, we've got this, we've been streaming, we watch movies all the time. You're in movie theaters as well. I know it's a little bit of a busy week for you though.
It has been, it was Nancy and I went out to Ventura spent about 5 days out at the beach. Mm. I actually have a little bit of a tan, if you can see that.
Yeah, you're not as rosy as Rick Farmelo's glasses.
Not as tasty as I usually am.
looks like you got some sun, Dave.
I did get some sun. It was wonderful. We had a really nice time. Good. Actually, while I was out there, the place we were staying at had some on demand. So I wound up binge watching A Million Little Things, which is an ABC show. It's an ensemble cast. I binge watched most of this most recent season.
Ooh.
Yeah, nice. It was enjoyable. The other thing that I watched, and I'm not completely done with it, is a show called The Tourist, which is essentially a man wakes up in the Australian outback with no recollection of who he is, and he must try to piece together his memory as merciless figures from his past pursue him. This stars Jamie Dornan, who is the man who wakes up with no memory. Mm-hmm. It's got a really good cast of people in it, including Damon Harriman, who many people might remember from Justified, the series Justified. Okay. He had a great character in that particular series. But Damon Harriman plays a detective in this particular show. But you can check that out on Facebook. It's called The Tourist. And I'm almost done with it. And then last weekend, I went and saw The Batman in IMAX.
Oh, I heard good things.
I have to tell you, I really liked this film.
Yeah.
And, it clocked in at 2 hours and 56 minutes. So over 3 hours when you factor in all of the trailers they played at the beginning.
Oh, my.
So I was in the IMAX seat for over three hours watching this film. Mm. And I got to tell you, when the movie ended, Al John, it did not feel like 3 hours to me.
That's a sign of good pacing, is it not?
It's a very good sign. I call it the ass meter, because my ass doesn't get numb, and I have to tell you, it was really a good film. It's dark. Mm-hmm. It's brooding. Mm-hmm. And boy, it rains a lot in Gotham City. Oh. I have to tell you, it rains a lot in Gotham City.
Did you know, I am a big, I have to say this. Did you know, the movie Seven is one of my favorite movies, right? For many different reasons. Obviously, Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt, they're absolutely amazing. Yeah. Kevin Spacey. But I will say that Seven was supposedly set in a Gotham City type of setting. And that the rain that constantly fell during the production of that movie is definitely harkens to that Gotham City vibe. So funny you say that. It rained a lot in Gotham. That's the kind of same vibe that you get when you watch the movie Seven, inspired by Batman. So
yeah, no, and I have to tell you, I mean, it certainly adds a level of texture to the movie.
Sure.
And to the atmosphere of a lot of the film outside. Look, I enjoyed the Batman. Robert Pattinson. Really great. Zoe Kravitz, terrific. It's just overall, I thought it was a very, very good movie.
Good.
Very enjoyable. I liked it.
Awesome. Good. Good to hear. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully I'll have a chance to see it this weekend. That's my goal, to go see
good.
It.
I hope you do.
Well, Chris and I are both Batman fans. So the next thing for me is tackling Star Trek Picard, because I have been looking forward. You know how much of a diehard Trek fan I am.
Sure.
And saw season one. There were some ups and downs, a lot more ups than downs. But this season, kicking into high gear, bringing back, I would say, the antagonist for Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart's foil, if you will, and John DeLancey, who plays Q. There's something amiss in the universe. There's, I don't know if you remember, Dave, I don't know how much of a Star Trek fan you are, but you know when Captain Kirk goes back and goes into this alternate reality of the mirror universe where everyone is evil, and instead of Starfleet being a very peacekeeping organization to explore new worlds, they conquer with the knife, and they go in and they do this whole thing. Well, apparently they go into this universe of the mirror universe with an evil Picard who rules with an iron fist, and it's very interesting to see, because they never really tackled that in the Next Generation. They used it that in other shows, but it's great to see. It's good to see Whoopi Goldberg, reviving her role as Guinan, the trusted friend of Captain Picard. So a lot of great, good vibes from my childhood there, and good storytelling.
And that's on Paramount Plus.
It is on Paramount Plus. Yeah. So that is on there. And of course, I'm catching up now. I've streamed the first part of, caught up to The Walking Dead as well. And of course it's great. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Negan, the character, he's such a great actor. Liked him in so many different roles. I would say he was great in The Watchmen, because that's one of the first roles I remember him in. So he's great. So looking forward to seeing the rest of those series as well.
You know, by the way, they're doing a fifth spinoff of Walking Dead.
Yep.
I saw a little blurb in the trades about Isle of the Dead.
Yep, they're doing Isle of the Dead, and then and speaking of Jeffrey Dean Morgan, he and Lauren Cohen are doing a spinoff series of who plays Maggie, Lauren Cohen. They also played Batman's parents in the prior Batman film, the Bruce Wayne and Martha Wayne, who got shot. The two of them were actually Bruce Wayne's parents in the previous Batman movie.
Right.
So it's funny that the both of them, of course, work on Walking Dead together, another comic book franchise, and they're going to go off and do their spinoff series as well. So a lot of great stuff going on for that. Big fans of both of those actors. But I guess we've got a few tidbits in our news for this week. So let's get into it, shall we?
Skull Rock Podcast, this week in Disney and pop culture.
You know, Disney Plus attracting so many new viewers with what will be their new price tier, ad-supported price tier. I think we mentioned it briefly. They've got a brand new series for the Muppets. I'll just briefly talk about that. The new series, Muppets Mayhem, is going to be streaming on Disney Plus coming soon. We've got the brand new Pinocchio film. They just released a brand new image of with Tom Hanks as Geppetto. That looks really good.
Yeah,
that looks really good. But the world was really set on fire. I'll just lead with this. I know that I was going to lead with a different story, but since I'm already talking about Disney Plus, we'll lead with a little bit of, you see, the music of John Williams. Isn't that wonderful? I love
it. The fight is done. we lost.
And I love this trailer. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Millions upon millions of views of this trailer breaking the internet record at StarWars.com and on YouTube. The return of Ewan McGregor as a follow-up to Star Wars Revenge of the Sith, alongside Hayden Christensen coming back, reprising his role as Anakin / Darth Vader. And this is going to be amazing, Dave.
You know, I saw the trailer for this. It looks fantastic. It looks very, very engaging, and I can't wait to watch it.
Absolutely. Be sure to check that out as it hits Disney Plus May 25th. It is the same day that Star Wars A New Hope opened in 1977, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Crazy, right? Oh, my goodness. I can't wait. Speaking of Disney, of course, this is more controversial. Yeah, did you want to?
Al John, I was going to say, we need to get a sound effect of somebody stepping in a hot mess. A real squishy sound effect, I think, when we have stories like this. Go ahead. You tell us this one.
Oh, wait, hold on. That's as close as I got, man. It's a Hanna-Barbera library. I just pulled it.
No, we need like a squishy mess.
Oh, okay. This is all I got.
That's good.
Okay. And I guess the PR dumpster fire continues. Disney to pause Florida political donations as CEO tells staff, "I'm sorry," over the Don't Say Gay Bill response. And that was from Bob Chapek. You know, this is not a good look. It's just not a good look. Please prepare something, PR Disney. That's all I can say about that.
I mean, this is just a hot mess the way this is unfolded. I mean, every day it just seems to get worse. It's like somebody walking by and throwing gasoline into the dumpster and just letting it flare up even more. You know, I mean, it's really shocking to me that the company has, you know, so fumbled this this story. I mean, it's just this whole issue. And frankly, I mean, honestly, I think a company like Disney shouldn't be involved in politics. Yeah. You know, I mean, they have such a broad and diverse audience that loves what Disney stands for, because you use it as an escape from the world that we live in, you know, and in a sense, why would you get involved in all of this stuff? I just feel like they shouldn't.
There's a lot of different paths you can take, for sure. Yes. And I think part of that is crafting great messaging. And even though I pat Bob Chapek on the back for, you know, admitting fault, the fact that he's saying, "I'm sorry," I still feel that there's a lot more that can be done. Hey, look, no one's perfect, but everyone is flawed. That is the human condition. So let's just try to be better. That's all.
You know, but these are topics where there's a no win here, you know, because, you know, there's a big segment of the Disney audience that supports this bill. There's a big segment of the Disney audience that doesn't support this bill. And so, you know, you're just stepping into something where it's really a no win.
Right.
You know, and that's all I can say about it. It's just, you know, it's kind of distracting, and it takes away from all the good things that this company does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we applaud those efforts as well and have celebrated them here on this show. So let's not forget that. Let's move on to Netflix along with Disney Plus and their, once again, you know, making it more accessible to people and price points and being sensitive to those. My daughter is screaming like a banshee in the background.
I can hear her in the background. I was just about to say, what listening. Is going on at your house?
She is going nuts. I don't know what's going on there. Netflix. Maybe she's screaming about Netflix prices going up. And it's happening immediately. I would scream about that too. You know, we need every dollar in this house with those two Rugrats. But UK customers customers months after pricing went up in December. Of course, it's going up worldwide here in March for the most part. But there you go. Costs of content are going up by at least a dollar or two. That's just what's going to happen, right? To be expected.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And, you know, Aljon, the streaming services right now, it's an arms race. They are all clamoring to get content onto their platforms, and they have to spend ridiculous amounts of money to do it. And, you know, all of the services are going to be raising their prices. You know, Disney's already raised their prices, and they've introduced a commercial platform that's at a lower price point. I just think that you're going to see more and more of this. You're going to see an annual price increase happen across the board at all of these streaming services, because they have to, because of the amount of money they're spending on content.
100%. You know, but if you, once again, just like anything else, if you find value in the service, then support it. And that's what we continue to do. And I continue to support Disney and put my money in there, because Lord knows I use a Mickey Mouse Clubhouse on a daily basis.
There you go.
So there you have it. And in not so good news, one of my childhood heroes had recently passed. So let's listen.
Emilio Delgado, best known as Luis, the handyman on Sesame Street, landed the role back in 1971, 2 years after the show premiered.
I was so excited, but as an actor, I knew that it was a job, you know, and maybe it'll last a year, maybe 2 years, maybe not even that long, you know, but it was great. I had a job on television.
Little did he know he'd be a Sesame Street fixture for 44 years. Delgado was born in Calexico, California, but was raised by his grandparents on the other side of the border in Mexicali.
Just an amazing talent. Emilio Delgado passes away at the age of 81.
You know, in a sense, he was one of the faces of Sesame Street.
Yes.
He had been on for so long. You know, when you see a picture of him, you immediately associate him with Sesame Street.
100%. I mean, that's 44 plus years he spent on Sesame Street educating children like myself. It is very sad, because I you almost feel like these people, as you grow up, they're part of your family. You grow such a great connection to them and the different characters that you see on television, and Sesame Street is no different. You know, when Fred Rogers passed away, I took it very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And
same here.
You know, and he just was just such a beacon of light and love for the world. And I feel the same way about Emilio, and he will certainly be missed. However, he's not the only one that had passed away recently, Dave. You know, you sent me this note as well. You know, we had another beloved actor pass away this week. And you probably are more of a fan and know the work better than I do, so I'll let you take that.
Well, you know something, this is Conrad Janis, and he is one of those character actors that when you see his face, you go, I remember him. He's been in so much stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the headline was that he was a trombonist and a Mork and Mindy actor, and he was 94 when he passed away this past week. But, you know, he was not only just on Mork and Mindy, he played a neighbor in the same condo building as Kelsey Grammer in Frasier,
right.
The series Frasier. He was in Get Smart. He was in so many different things that, you know, he's one of those character actors that people would recognize but wouldn't know his name.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly right. I think that, you know, when you're on TV and you're like that, you have that character actor thing going on that Conrad did, you will definitely recognize him. 94 years old, Dave. What an amazing
life. And you know, really just an incredible canon of films. You know, he was in The Untouchables, My Favorite Martian. He was in films like Airport 75, The Happy Hooker, The Duchess and Dirtwater Fox, The Buddy Holly Story, Oh God, Book 2, Brewster's Millions, Sonny Boy, Mr. Saturday Night, The Cable Guy.
So
you know, he was you know, in Bad Blood. He was in just so many different things on television and in film. Just a very recognizable guy, and what a body of work he leaves behind. And you know what? 94, what a great life.
Absolutely. So Conrad, Emilio, rest in peace. You will be missed. And your fans will be able to at least enjoy the work that you've done for many, many more years to come. Rest in peace.
Skull Rock Podcast, interview time.
Dave, once again, there you are. And we are here with a interview segment, you and I talking about the True Life Adventure DVD collection and Animal Kingdom. So,
yeah. And, you know, I was so glad that one of our listeners wrote in and suggested that we discuss this, because it was just a flood of memories that came back for me on, you know, shooting all the intros with Roy E. Disney down at the Animal Kingdom Park in Florida, and also watching all of those True Life Adventures again and being involved in some of the restoration work and, you know, and all the just great stories of going down to the Animal Kingdom Park.
So let's first talk then about the how this project came about, because I remember the DVD collections were really huge back in the day. And yes, I collected a lot of those collectible tins with all that great content in there. When were you approached when the collection and these masterpieces were kind of being put together? Like, this is how this came about, and this is how we want you to participate. How did that kind of come together?
Well, you know, it's an interesting story, because this goes back to when Roy E. Disney was having his fallout with Michael Eisner. I think most people who are into Disney remember that period, and Roy resigned from the board of directors and started the Save Disney campaign. Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ultimately what wound up happening was Michael Eisner left the company and Bob Iger became the chairman and CEO of Disney. And one of the first things that Bob did was to patch things up with Roy. And Roy came back to the company, and I got a phone call one day in my office, and it was, you know, Roy's gravelly voice. Hey, Dave, how you doing? You know, and he said he wanted to get the True Life Adventures out on DVD. And, you know, and anytime Roy called me and said he wanted to do something, I was like, okay, let's do it.
Of course. You know?
And so obviously home entertainment was a big part of putting all that together. But we wanted to have Roy, you know, we wanted to shoot some new footage of Roy introducing these films on the head of these DVDs. And it was four legacy tins, each with two DVDs in them. So it was a total of eight DVDs.
Right, right. And that included all the cleaned up films and things that you did to restore that, right?
Yeah, and the bonus features, yep, and things like that.
Yeah.
But you know, the real thing, the real big thing was going to be filming Roy. And it was such a natural thing to say, you know, let's go to the Animal Kingdom and shoot in different locations at the Animal Kingdom that, you know, sort of show us different parts of the world. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, to have the DVDs tie into the Animal Kingdom Park. I mean, that's like total synergy for the company, right?
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so it was kind of interesting, because I got a you know, call. Actually, I went to a meeting, and it was basically they didn't have the budget to take everybody down and film in Orlando at the Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
Right. So these DVDs, you got to remember, you know, they usually, you know, had a certain budget for doing extra stuff for these DVD releases. But as DVD sales started to decline, so did those budgets start to decline, you know?
Right.
And they just felt like they didn't have the budget to go down to the Animal Kingdom. And so we started to look at locations in Southern California. Like, we could go down to the beach. We could go out to the desert. We could go up into the mountains. We could go to a forest, you know, and we could shoot all of these intros that way. But honestly, I have to tell you, it just didn't feel good. And I was the guy that had to call Roy up and tell Roy that we didn't have the budget to go down to Orlando, you know? Yeah. And I did. And naturally he was disappointed, but he also understood, you know, he understood the budget issues. And so I finished that call with him, and literally the next morning I get a call, hello, Dave, you know, and it's Roy again. And he goes, I was just thinking, and he says, what if I flew everybody down to Orlando on my on my plane? This is kind of like, this is like your buddy saying, hey, I've got a 75 Pontiac station wagon. I'm going to come and pick everybody up and take you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he had a 737 and he basically said, if I flew everybody down, would that, you know, allow us to do this? Cause he knew, and we all knew in our hearts that, you know, filming those introductions for the DVD at the Animal Kingdom Park in Florida was the absolute right thing to do.
Yes.
You know,
isn't it funny though, how those things work out though, because you posed him with this issue and there's disappointment, and yet, you know, here he is, you know, an executive level, I want to make this happen, and finds a way to try to make it work.
Yeah. So, you know, I said that would be fantastic. Let me go pose that to the powers that be at Home Entertainment, which I did. And it was funny because they came back and like Walt Disney World was going to cover the hotel rooms. Roy would fly us down there, but there was still the question of I think the Florida park was going to cover only Roy's meals. And we'd have to fend for ourselves. So I went back to Roy and said, look, I said, if you're willing to fly us down there, they're going to cover the hotel rooms, but they'll only cover your meals. So can you pick up meals for all of us? You know, meaning that they were paying for his meal ticket. Mm-hmm. So we would just all pile on to his meal ticket. And so the park picked up our meals as well.
Of course.
And he burst out laughing. He said, absolutely. You know, and that's how that all came together. You know,
Once again, love finds a way to make these things happen. And,
it was fun. And, you know, we were all kind of scattered about into different hotels because, as I recall, it was a fairly busy time of the year, you know? So it was like some of us were at one resort and some were at another. So we kind of split up a little bit, which was perfectly fine. And then we filmed, at various locations while the park was open. And, you know, there were some outcroppings where, you know, we were able to go where guests weren't allowed. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
And so there was one particular one that I remember really well, because there was like ruins of like a Cambodian temple or something, looking one way and looking another way, it was more jungle and, you know, tropical. Mm-hmm. And so we actually wound up doing two different introductions at that location just by turning the camera.
Interesting.
You know, turning the setup around.
I've got a little clip here. I don't think this is the clip that you're referencing, but here's a little bit of Roy.
The animals were always better than we ever thought they could have been because they were great actors.
Oh, there was a little bit of Roy talking about how the animals being the stars of these things were great actors. And I'm sure you know, there's so much of that footage there. And I think they really set the bar for what nature documentaries are today.
Well, you know something, though, I think that they really were the foundation for the Jacques Cousteau's and the you know, Mutual of Omaha type of nature films that came along afterwards. But you got to realize, you know, Seal Island, that was 1948. That was the first of the true life adventure films.
Yes, and won tons of Academy Awards to boot.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, Seal Island was really, you know, Alfred and Alma Malott, they were out shooting all this documentary footage of wildlife and culture in Alaska. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was taking the tons and tons of footage and distilling it down to a storyline that you could tell with those visuals, you know, and the narration of, you know, Winston Hibler narrating it, and, you know, it was directed by James Algar and, you know, all of that.
Yeah. I love that a lot. I think it's once again, it's, I remember picking up these, you know, I've told this story on the show before, that my dad would go to the public library and get 8mm films to show us. And these always had popped up, you know, just from him going there. And of course, that's how you fall in love with these things. Take a listen at some of this from Seal Island.
The march of the brides continues and competition increases. Of course, there's always one who just can't make up her mind.
I just love that. The stories that you put with these different animals is so much fun.
I think it, you know, these films are terrific, but you got to realize, you know, they wound up shooting, the Malott shot something like 100,000 feet of film and spent over a year filming all those seals for Seal Island. And, you know, I mean, that's a tremendous amount of footage, and you're using less than 10% of it for a feature film.
Oh, absolutely. I remember I interviewed Alistair Fothergill years ago for my old Sourcer radio show, and he did Bears for Disney Nature and a bunch of other things. And the amount of footage he captured is incredible. How much documentary filmmakers roll and, you know, how they're able to string that stuff together. I couldn't imagine going through all that, trying to edit and put together a narrative for all this stuff that just happens naturally.
And, you know, again, this was a huge amount of editing that had to happen. And by the way, Roy E. Disney was an assistant editor on some of these early true life adventure films. And I had many, many conversations with Roy over the years about him working on those. And he was an assistant editor to Norman Stormy Palmer. And I heard a lot about Stormy Palmer, you know, who worked on The Living Desert, Incredible Journey, and other things. But, you know, he worked on Grand Canyon, he really cut his chops with a seasoned film editor.
That's awesome. It's funny because, you know, you don't necessarily think of Roy as being, you know, down and dirty, you know, editing film, but that's exactly what he did, you know, kind of learning the family business, as it were, you know, and doing that. So going through this footage, this archival footage, when you're restoring something like this, were the actual prints still in really good shape when you're restoring this for the DVDs? Or how much work did you have to put into that?
On all of the films, I've said this before, Al John, on our show, the Walt Disney Studios has done a fantastic job with preserving their library, you know? So all of these films, negatives from the True Life Adventures were all digitally scanned, were all cleaned. cleaned up digitally just presented, I think, in just a beautiful way. And, you know, quite frankly, some of these films, I wish they would screen in the theaters.
Yeah.
Occasionally, you know, I mean, you can take, I think you could take some of the shorter True Life adventures and, you know, like, you know, Seal Island is 27 minutes. You could probably put two or three of these True Life adventure films together and screen them at the Academy or screen them, you know, do a limited engagement at theaters around the country.
Yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun if they were able to do that. You know, there's so much footage in there. How about, and you talked a little bit about shooting the intros with Roy and going in the park. Can you share a story? And we've shared a few during this, in the time that we've been doing the show together, about Roy and your interactions with Roy. You talked about going behind the scenes of, you know, these animals getting treated over at Animal Kingdom. Are there any other stories maybe that, that you can point out to our listeners about your interactions with Roy and how much fun it was to be around? Cause it seems like you guys had a blast.
Oh, I mean, look, anytime we went down to Orlando, if I was with him, we always had time to go over to the Animal Kingdom, always, you know, and being able to go to the Animal Kingdom with the guy that has his last name on, you know, all the buses and the front door of all the parks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was fantastic. I mean, I felt so lucky because, you know, I got to be in at the Animal Kingdom, you know. I have to say, Disney does a superb job of taking care of these animals. Mm-hmm. An absolutely superb job. They've got top-notch veterinarian staff and personnel down there whose sole purpose is to maintain, you know, the animals in good health and make sure they're taken care of, you know, and, you know, to be able to go down to the veterinary building and see a cheetah getting its annual exam or a silverback gorilla having a tooth extracted.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these are experiences that few, if any, ever get. And I just felt so incredibly lucky to be able to be in that room with Roy to see some of this stuff, you know? And one of the other things I always want to mention, and I've had these conversations with people who ask me about the Animal Kingdom or you know, the travels with Roy, is the work that the Animal Kingdom has done over the years. And now I got to tell you, there is a kingfisher, an Indonesian kingfisher that was on the verge of extinction. Mm-hmm. And I won't go into all the details. It had to do with Guam and some tree snakes eating eggs of these birds and the population diminishing to the point where it was near extinction. Like there was like maybe a dozen birds left of this particular kingfisher species. And they did a whole breeding program down at the Animal Kingdom in the aviary area, behind the scenes, working with a group in Guam and some other folks involved with sort of rebuilding this kingfisher species.
Wow.
And they brought them back literally from the brink of extinction. And I just have to say, you know, what other places do those kinds of things? I mean, there's certainly other facilities, but a company like Disney being able to do that down at the Animal Kingdom, I just think it's fantastic. I really do. I mean, it's just, it's something that they don't have to do. And it's not something that's really accessible to the guests.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had a friend that was a, for lack of a better word, a keeper, right? She worked there and she was a vet. And we were able to go backstage for just a brief moment and see the facility and how they take care of the animals that you don't see on stage, if you will. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. And we love animals. We, you know, we love rescue animals, dogs, cats, what have you. But just to see how Disney takes so much care, as you said, of these animals is truly heartwarming. And their efforts to conserve and to protect and to make sure these extinct species, people just don't know enough about. I know that we give every time we go to the park, we always give to the fund and do things like that because that's what we love to do. But it's really cool how that effort is continuing on, you know, Walt and Roy's legacy of helping animals and conserving the environment.
No, absolutely, without question. And, you know, Roy E. was a huge supporter of, you know, the Peregrine Falcon Fund.
Right.
He adored the animal kingdom. The animal kingdom wouldn't be there if it wasn't for Roy. Mm-hmm. You know, Roy convinced Michael during a Better Times in their relationship that Disney should build the Animal Kingdom Park down in Orlando. And I find it one of the most spectacular parks. I just love the way it's designed, the way it's laid out. And you've been down there with Kristen, you know, going on that, the bus into the Serengeti.
Oh, of course. The Kilimanjaro Safari is the best.
Yeah. The Kilimanjaro tour. I mean, it's fantastic, isn't it?
I love it. You know, everything from the Maharaja Jungle Trek to the, Of course. I mean, how can you not forget about the Yeti, right? I mean, there's so much. And of course, Joe Rohde's fingerprints, a lot of this stuff. But Roy E's definitely in a lot of this stuff. And of course, you've played an integral role in a lot of the different entertainment stuff at the Disney parks as well. So when you go through, it's nice to see some of your work being laid out there.
Well, you know, I've very, very little for me, honestly. But I have to say, there's first off, tip, if you've never done the Kilimanjaro bus tour, if you've never done that, it's like get to the Animal Kingdom when they just open and race to the back of the park to get online for that. Cause you have to do that early in the morning.
Yeah. Because that's when the lions are out.
If you do it late in the afternoon or mid afternoon, all the animals are like in the bushes, you know, to having a siesta.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know? that is a tip and trick. Did Roy have a particular favorite park food when he went? Was he a big turkey leg guy? Did he go around with a Dole Whip? I mean, what was his go to? I can see Roy E. digging the churro.
It was always interesting to walk into the park with him because he'd have to have the sunglasses on and a baseball cap, so that he wouldn't get recognized because he was easily recognizable, obviously, but I honestly don't think we've ever gotten any kind of like snacky thing in any of the parks that I was with him on those trips because we're a lot of times behind the scenes. In fact, oftentimes when we went to the Animal Kingdom, we would get a small van that would drive us into that Kilimanjaro tour. So we kind of had this like little van with a staffer, taking us on the same route that the big buses go on with, the ride vehicles with, I don't know how many 50 or 70 passengers, but we were always in like a small kind of little van for our own personal tour, which was always a lot of fun, obviously.
When you're big wheeling with a gentleman next to you by the name of Disney, you take plaids and big vans wherever you go. That's what it is. You get the full service.
We have taken the monorail. I was with Roy where we decided to take the monorail from the Contemporary. We had dinner at the Grand. It was the California Grill at the top of the Contemporary.
Yes.
We actually went down to the monorail platform and we took the monorail back to the Floridian where we were staying. And it was the funniest thing because we waited online with everybody.
Yeah. And no one bothered you because he was incognito?
No, he wasn't really at that point because it was evening and it was like we just got online and there was a few people that kind of noticed who he was, but not everybody because people were kind of like, why would he be waiting online? You know what I mean? Like, wouldn't he just jump the queue? And no, we got online, we waited our turn and we got on the monorail. And I remember getting into the monorail with him and there were some people on the platform and they all of a sudden just realized who he was. You could just see the mouths hang open like, oh my gosh, you know,
I would
Disney.
I would 100%. And I would, you know, even if I saw Dave Bossert on the street, I'd be like, it's Dave Bossert.
Oh, stop it. Stop that crap.
I want you to tell our audience who don't necessarily have this set, or you know, right now not all of this content is available on Disney Plus, unfortunately. Some of it is, but not all of it. Can you tell us who Winston Hibbler is?
So Winston Hibbler is a Disney legend. I mean, he's been all over the place at the company. In fact, I have to tell you, and I'm having trouble with my computer at the moment.
Oh,
there we go. He actually was a screenwriter, a film producer, a director, a narrator at the Disney Studios.
Yes.
And he was the first of three generations of Hibblers that worked at the company.
Isn't that amazing?
Because Winston's son, I believe it was Michael Hibbler, he became a live action director, worked at Disney for quite a number of years.
Amazing.
And then his grandson actually worked at Disney Feature Animation.
Yes,
as he was like a head of operations or director of operations at Disney Animation.
Right.
So, you know, you have all this history and, you know, he worked, he just worked on a tremendous amount of live action, at the studio, was a screenwriter, as I mentioned.
Story guy. Yeah.
He was basically a story guy and just an amazing Disney legend, if you will.
You know, it's interesting, you know, you did in and I mentioned this because you did a bunch of these bonus features and he came up in that. And a lot of people don't realize not only Disney legend recognizes a legend in 1992 posthumously, but he had those voiceover roles in that True Life Adventures. And it's just one of those voices that, you know, you just identify with the show. And
yeah,
so he's great. But of course he also pulling double and triple duty as a story guy, as well during that entire time. But, I think it's really, really cool that,
it's typical. And James Algar, was, you know, an animator, you know, he's got a credit on, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. And then he becomes a director on Fantasia and Bambi, Victory Through Air Power. And then he becomes the director for Seal Island. And, you know, so James Algar was a writer, producer, director, you know, on a tremendous amount of material.
When you're doing this, I guess you're repackaging this for DVD, and you're doing the raps, you know, the intros with Roy E, and you're doing all these behind the scenes features and things. How long does it usually take timeline wise as a filmmaker yourself, Dave, putting this stuff together, and compiling it? Were you under a deadline? Like this needs to happen here, and you're kind of pushed.
Yeah,
and
you know, I mean, they set a release date for these things, you know, so you're working up against the release date. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't even recall what the lead time was. Like, we had to have stuff finished, I don't know how long before the actual DVDs came out. 'Cause you got to remember, you know, once you, have shot all this stuff and edited it and done all your scoring and all the things that have to happen to it, those get baked onto those DVDs. So they have to author the DVD. So, you know, this opening goes with this disc that has Seal Island, this, that, and the other thing on it, right? And then once they've done all of that, then they have to press all those discs and package everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know? Well, if you get a chance, folks, you know, please feel free to check out some of the shorts that I know that were extracted for this collection on Disney Plus. But I know that, you know, Seal Island, as far as I know, is still not on there. But I know if you do some digging, you'll be able to find it. And, you know, I just have to also go back and talk more about Animal Kingdom. And Roy, as we, you know, we continue down this path, you know, you're telling so many stories about Roy and Animal Kingdom. What else was he really fond of in terms of being at the park? I mean, you talked about, you know, the layout and everything. How much of his fingerprints are on, like, this is how the park should be, or did he leave that mostly to Imagineers? How hands-on was he in creating that?
You know, he was always a hands-on guy, but I think, you know, you got to realize he was incredibly respectful of the artists and Imagineers and all the people involved. And, you know, he would come into high-level meetings and give high-level comments, you know, but he wasn't, you know, picking out wallpaper for a resort room or anything like that, you know.
you mentioned that
because
he wasn't
doing anything like that, which unfortunately Michael started doing towards the end of his reign.
Right. I remember that specifically in reading that, and I just laughed and I said, "Boy, that's micromanaging." If I've never heard it before, but
I think you know, Roy, a lot of people, I think, underestimated Roy. Roy was a very, very bright guy, and very, very thoughtful in his comments, you know.
When you look back at the collection of True Life Adventures and the legacy of those films and its impact on pop culture and education, that can't be fully, I guess, described, because I mean, it has so much to do with how people view nature documentaries, how people are inspired to pick up and help animals and to rescue and care for animals. What do you think that legacy is for the True Life Adventures in those films?
Well, you know, again, what I said at the beginning of our conversation is really that these were this was the foundation for all the documentarians that followed, that made nature films, you know, because you had, you know, the first seven True Life Adventures, which would be Seal Island in Beaver Valley or Beaver Valley, Nature's Half Acre, the Olympic Elk, Water Birds, Bear Country, and Prowlers of the Everglades. Mm-hmm. You know, these were like, you know, half hour nature films, you know. Mm-hmm. So you could go to a movie theater in the late 40s and early 50s and see one of these as a featurette before you saw a feature film, you know. Yeah. And then they went on to do like The Living Desert, Vanishing Prairie, The African Lion, Secrets of Life, White Wilderness, and Jungle Cat. Those were all features. And out of those features, they went, and this is the brilliance of Walt. Walt was able to repurpose a tremendous amount of his material into other things, especially when television started coming in, because, you know, The Living Desert became, you know, they carved it up in the early 70s, and they created Animals at Home in the Desert, Predators of the Desert, and What is a Desert? Mm-hmm. So you got three separate films out of a feature that, you know, with some editing and some new overdub, you know, new voiceover and music, you know, you've got a completely new film. The Vanishing Prairie, they did the same thing in the early 60s. And some of these were used for The Wonderful World of Disney for put on television. You know, the buffalo, Majestic Symbol of the Plains, came out of Vanishing Prairie. Small Animals of the Plains, pioneer trails, Indian lore, and bird life of the plains, large animals that once roamed the plains, mm-hmm. you know? So that to me was, you know, and honestly, Al John, I have to say, there's enough nature films within the Disney library that they could create a whole separate, you know, subcategory on Disney Plus that's just all those nature films, and they're all fantastic.
Yeah, we're definitely looking into that, because I can't tell you how much our kids love watching the animals. Every day we've got Disney Nature on, every day we're doing these films. And, you know, there's so much footage, I'm sure, that's still left to be discovered, and some of them not actually seeing the light of day. Like, you know, these educational shorts that were done were never put on the DVD. You know, and hopefully one of these days they'll surface somewhere other than, I guess they might, some of them be on YouTube. If you really take that deep dive, but man, that's just a treasure of just great stuff.
Yeah. And by the way, I know somebody's going to say, you didn't mention Perry. Well, you know what? Perry is a true life fantasy. It's not a true life adventure.
Oh, yes. Yes. Right?
And so Perry was, you know, the first true life fantasy, the first and only true life fantasy that they made. And I have to say, Roy told me some hair raising stories about the making of Perry.
Okay.
Probably don't want to tell some of those on the air. Just because some of it was just so crazy in how they got some of the shots.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I was thinking to myself, yeah, you know, it's funny. Perry does come up every now and again, but it is, you know, you were right. I mean, it's a fantasy, but people bundle it in occasionally with true life adventures, about the squirrel and different things. And I don't want to know, or do I? I don't guess I want to know about that.
Yeah,
so we should avoid some of it.
I have to say, you know, there's some wonderful bonus features that were put together for the True Life Adventure DVD collection that was released in 2006. There's backstage with Roy Disney at the Animal Kingdom with elephants. And by the way, there's a backstage with Roy Disney at the Disney Animal Kingdom cheetah medical exam, which I believe that may have been the one I was at. So you might get a glimpse of a young Dave in some of the shots.
I was going to say, which one is your favorite? Which one was your favorite behind the scenes section?
You know, well, something, the one that's not on here to me was, I think the silverback gorilla to me was really like, the massive size of a silverback gorilla,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, it really is a menacing creature,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to see it lying on an exam table and its hand was bigger than my head,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, just crazy, you know, that was one of the more memorable ones for me. But there's also a great feature and a great bonus feature on volume 4, Nature's Mysteries. There's a backstage with Roy E. and his eldest son, Roy Patrick, mm-hmm. at the Disney Animal Kingdom butterflies.
Yes.
The butterfly habitat.
Yes, yes, definitely. I would check that out. When was the last time you spoke to Roy Patrick?
Oh my gosh. Right before the holidays.
Oh, good.
I think I saw him.
You know what? I really enjoyed our time when we interviewed you guys years ago for the podcast. It was years ago. And, you know, when your Roy E. book had come out, Remembering Roy E. Disney, and you guys were just amazing. Just a really fun interview. Next time you talk to him, please give him my best. He probably won't remember me, but this really cool that you're able to continue, revisiting some of these great stories, telling and sharing the love of that Roy E. Disney had, and the times that you had together in such a great way. And man, just looking forward to delving down more of this rabbit hole. I mean, there's so much more we could definitely talk about in terms of,
you know, there's a tremendous amount of material. And I have to say, a friend of mine is actually working on a True Life Adventures book that goes, that does a deep dive behind the scenes with a lot of the filmmakers that were involved with the various films. Nice. So I think that's going to be a real wonderful book to get your hands on if you're interested in the nature films. But you know, all of these nature films are just wonderful to watch, I think. Gosh, you know, I have my whole set of legacy DVDs here at the house. And, you know, just being able to watch, you know, Vanishing Prairie or Living Desert, you don't see those kinds of nature films that much anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wonderful to see a storyline crafted around all of this beautiful photography.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, the template was made there with the series. People are still using it today. And I love the story threads, the A, B, and C stories that a lot of these things happen. I mean, it's treated like a real, real subject, like a real film. It's great when you see all that stuff. It's compelling.
And it's continuing with the Disney Nature label at the company, and they're doing some beautiful contemporary animal documentaries, if you will. And after Disney acquired 20th Century Fox, they got National Geographic Films. So you've got now Disney Nature and National Geographic Films all under the Disney umbrella.
And once again, I mean, great. I'm glad it's all there. And, Disney, are great stewards of this type of material. So I look forward to seeing more of that stuff coming out in the future. I look forward to hopefully one day, Dave, having a lot of this stuff on Disney Plus. That's what the fans want. I think we deserve to have all this stuff. Of course, I want to be able to simply not reach over for my DVDs. I want the convenience. This is how we are. First world problems, Dave. I want to be able to hit the remote and hit all these things and be able to find them at my fingertips. That's what I want.
Yeah, absolutely, without question. And what I don't get, and I don't understand the logistics behind, how they're putting stuff up on Disney Plus, but all of this material is right there. You could put this content up on Disney Plus for people to enjoy whenever they want to. And, I just feel as though it's like, why isn't it up?
I know. Well,
In fact, I have to tell you, I went on to HBO Max last week and I rewatched The Maltese Falcon with Humphrey Bogart. Right. Mm-hmm. And I decided, well, let me see what other Humphrey Bogart films they had Casablanca. They had The Maltese Falcon. But that was it. It was like, well, where's Treasure of Sierra Madre? Where is, Key Largo? Where are some of those other films? And, you've got them in your vault. Why don't you just put them up and let people watch them? It creates buzz within the film community of people wanting to see some of these classic films. I think the same at Disney. It's like, you've got all of these True Life Adventures. Why don't you put them up under the True Life Adventure logo?
Absolutely. It should be there. I think
some
we all
category
agree on that.
under National Geographic or something.
Yeah, might as well. Or Disney Nature for that matter. Make it happen. They own all that stuff. Just put it out there for the fans to devour. We absolutely love it. And heaven knows I've watched my share of classic Mickey Mouse this Mickey Mouse films as well as Mickey Mouse Club, early stuff that's out there. I just love to see that stuff. It just reminds me of It reminds me of being a kid again.
Yeah. And by the way, I as you were talking, I don't know why this popped into my head, but you know, when we were filming at the Animal Kingdom, these intros with Roy, you know, we didn't have like a Star Wagon trailer for him to go into and change. Mm-hmm. You know, he stepped behind, you know, like a sculpture, you know, the ruins of something, out of view of the audience, you know, of the guests in the park, and you know, changed his shirt, took one shirt off, put another shirt on, and then, you know, they redid the camera setup, and so he had a different shirt on when he did this, you know, this next intro. So it was really kind of I would say
guerrilla filmmaking.
Lean and mean.
I would say it's called guerrilla filmmaking 101 with Dave Bosser.
Guerrilla filmmaking, yes.
Dave Bosser's behind the scenes true life adventures. I love it. And the true life adventures and saving money on a budget, filming and making sure Roy had enough foliage behind him so that he could change into a new shirt from unsuspecting eyes of guests at the park. I love that. So once again, Dave, thank you so much for this and sharing your stories about Roy E. and about the Animal Kingdom and the true life adventures. We absolutely love it. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Al John.
Oh, of course. Thank you for being on Skull Rock Podcast.
Your attention, please. Now loading on track number one for a trip around Walt Disney's Magic Kingdom.
Skull Rock Podcast.
All aboard.
Your main street to the world of Disney.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a great interview. What a great interview, Dave.
Great guy he was, huh?
Once again, Dave, thank you. Thank you for not eating all the fruits and vegetables and the deli platter in the green room. We appreciate that. We will save that for our next guest and the next show. Don't forget, team, thank you so much for listening here to the very end. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the show everywhere you get podcasts, all the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we're on it. DM us. Be sure to do that as well, especially on Facebook. We love checking that out. And also check out all the great emails. Yes, Dave at SkullRockPodcast.com. Al John at SkullRockPodcast.com. Also part of the Sorcerer Radio Network. We do have a product, a radio page there where you can click on the archive of shows, which is awesome. So please check that out. And don't forget to, Dave's got a brand new book in the works, House of the Future. It's on Indiegogo, and you can fund it. You can fund it and pre-order your book, and there's some awesome perks if you decide you want to take it that step further. And if you even want to tour with Dave, you could do that too. There are all kinds of great tiers that you can contribute to the Indiegogo fund for the House of the Future book. So please do that. Dave, any other final words?
Well, no, this was an absolutely fun show. Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it. As always, peace and love to all of you out there. Have a fantastic week, and we will see you back here next Monday right here on the Skull Rock Podcast.
I'm Al John Goh, co-host of the Disney List Podcast, as heard on Sorcerer Radio, as well as Skull Rock Podcast, here with my wife, Kristen. Hello.
Hello.
You are an earmarked agent who books Disney travel vacations for people all the time. Give our listeners a reason why they want to give you a call instead of just booking a trip by themselves.
Well, I can do all of the legwork for them. I have expertise. I've been to the Disney parks well over 100 times, so they've got that knowledge at their hand, as well as it saves them time and money.
Where can people get in touch with you so that they can book their next Disney cruise, Disney park trip, Adventures by Disney?
They can contact me at themeparksandcruises@gmail.com. I'm Kristen Hetzel, vacation planner, world traveler, Disney foodie, and theme park fan.
I'm Al John Goh. I'm the husband who's also Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel Comics fan. And together, we host the Disney List Podcast.
Every week, you'll hear us list our favorite things about Disney theme parks, films, shows, travel, Marvel, and Star Wars in a top 10 list, rankings, and more.
That's an impressive list.
Subscribe to the Disney List podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcast platform. You can even stream us on Sorcerer Radio at srsounds.com and check out our live shows on Facebook. The Disney List podcast. Visit thedisneylist.com.
I'm Kristen Hetzel, co-host of Dining at Disney podcast. Every week, I chat about dining at Disneyland and Walt Disney World Resort and Disney Cruise Line with my fellow foodie, Bubba. We also feature restaurants and food reviews, information to help you plan your dining, Disney food news, recipes, and a monthly panel discussion. Visit diningatdisney.com and subscribe to Dining at Disney podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcast platform. Dining at Disney podcast, the happiest plate on earth.